Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 27th of March. After some time of violence being down in Iraq, this week has been a very hard week, and the news is pretty disturbing this morning. You, of course, have heard the news from National Public Radio at the top of the hour that has talked about increased fighting, increased violence in Basra, particularly, which used to be under British control. Saboteurs blew up one of Iraq's two main oil export pipelines from Basra. 70% to 80% of the oil flows through Basra. There have been many injuries and deaths in Basra. In Baghdad, the news isn't much better. Shiite militants are hammering the U.S.-protected Green Zone with rockets and mortars for the fourth day this week. There have been demonstrations, tens of thousands of Shiites taking to Baghdad's streets to protest the government crackdown on militias in Basra. Heavy fighting between Iraqi security forces has erupted, and gunmen erupted for a third day in the southern oil port in the capital. There have been severe problems, and there will be a discussion of all of this hour with one of our favorite guests who really knows the area very well and spent last year actually in the Middle East. He is Fawaz Jurjis, and it's been a little while since we've spoken with him. He is Sarah Lawrence. He is the Christian A. Johnson Chair in International Affairs and Middle Eastern Studies. He has written extensively, conducted field research on relations between the Islamist jihadists and Western countries, particularly the United States, in several Middle Eastern countries. He's the author of Journey of the Jihadist, Inside Muslim Militancy, also The Far Enemy, Why Jihad Went Global, The Superpowers in the Middle East, America and Political Islam, Clash of Interests or Clash of Cultures. He writes extensively for all kinds of important newspapers and magazines, and he spent the 2006-2007 academic year as a Carnegie Scholar residing in the Middle East, interviewing activists, civil society leaders, mainstream and radical Islamists, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for Fawaz Jurjis. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Or send an email if you'd like. You can do that. That's talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Fawaz Jurjis, it's a pleasure to speak with you again. Hello.
The pleasure is mine. Good morning.
Yeah, nice to have you with us. Let's start with Basra, where there had been an attempt by the military police, the Iraqi military police, to take back the city, which, of course, used to be under British control. The reports I'm hearing today is that the police have disintegrated.
Well, Kathleen, not only there is heavy fighting in Basra, which is a southern town, one of the largest cities in the south and one of the most important economic and financial cities in Iraq. It's where oil is produced and exported outside of Iraq. But also fighting is spreading into the southern cities and towns where the Shia in Iraq, the Shia in Iraq represent about 60% of the population, so it's spreading into southern cities and also into Baghdad itself, the capital, in particular the southern city where Muqtada al-Sadr, the radical nationalist Islamist Iraqi leader, basically lives. So the situation is highly fragile in Basra, in the southern cities, and in Baghdad, and it seems to me, according to the American military sources, is that the militias that basically are part of the Mahdi army, the Muqtada al-Sadr's army, basically have taken several positions of the security forces, but we don't know the extent, the gravity of the security situation on the ground because reporters have not been allowed to go to where the fighting is taking place.
Mm-hmm. Has al-Sadr made any statement here? Is he trying to stop this, to hold on to a ceasefire or not?
Well, al-Sadr and his followers accuse the government, the al-Maliki government, basically of cracking down against the al-Sadr's movement by arresting leaders and lieutenants, by trying to basically oppress the movement. In fact, one of the reasons that al-Sadr basically says that the fighting is taking place because as a result of crackdown by the al-Maliki government. So in this particular sense, even though the crisis has been brewing for quite a few weeks. I think the root causes, Kathleen, are very deep. What we are witnessing today in Iraq is part of a intense civil war within the Shiite community. Keep in mind that the Shiite community is a very powerful community in Iraq, not only because it represents about 60% of the population, but because the government in Iraq, the central government, is dominated by Shiite factions, basically Muqtada Sadr and other two leading Shiite political and social forces.
Mm-hmm. What is the way to stop this violence? Everybody has fears that it's just going to keep escalating at this point. The news gets worse and worse and worse every day of this week.
Well, I think you cannot really isolate the recent fighting within the Shiite community in Basra, in the southern cities, in Baghdad, without really understanding the what I call the gravity of the political situation in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Not only there are fault lines between the Shiite community and the Sunni communities, there's not only sectarian strife between Sunni and Shiites for the last few years, but even there are internal fault lines within the various communities. And what the fighting in the last few days has shown is that the situation in Iraq is extremely grave and that there are deep differences and tensions not only between the various Iraqi communities, but also within the leading communities as well.
Mm-hmm. But the administration has pointed repeatedly recently to the success of the surge in Iraq and the violence levels being way down. What do you say to that?
Kathleen, here is the situation. On the tactical level, the surge, that's the increase of the American forces, has brought about a slight decrease in violence. That is, let me give your viewers an example of what I mean by that. Since the American surge, in particular in the last 4 months, we're talking about 1,000 Iraqi civilians' death, as opposed to the 3,000 Iraqi civilian death before the American surge. So it's ironic that we are celebrating basically major progress in Iraq because we are witnessing about 1,000 Iraqi civilians dead on monthly basis. This is a large number. But the strategic situation, and this is really what the fighting indicates, on the strategic level, Iraq remains deeply volatile and polarized. Iraqi communities are deeply polarized and basically there are deep divisions between and amongst Iraqi communities. And I would go further. The infighting or the fighting that we have witnessed in the last week within the Shiite community tells us that the fault lines are really deeper and wider and that the strategic situation in Iraq has not improved, even though on the tactical level there has been a decrease in violence in Iraq in the last few months.
Mm-hmm. What's the status of the Iraqi security forces, Fawaz? Do they know what they're doing?
Well, I mean, let me be blunt here, Kathleen. What we need to understand that the central government, is the biggest militia in Iraq. I know it might come as a surprise to you and to your listeners, but the truth is the biggest militia in Iraq today is the centralized government led by al-Maliki. It's a Shia-dominated government whereby, I mean, you have the two leading Shiite factions, that is the so-called the Supreme Islamic Council in Iraq and the Fadila parties, two leading Shiite parties, basically exercise control over Iraqis. And this is why al-Sadr, that is Muqtada al-Sadr, the radical Islamist and nationalist Shiite leaders, resents the dominance of his two counterpart Shiite parties. The Sunnis are extremely dissatisfied with the sectarian-oriented government. So in this particular sense, I mean, look what we have done, what we have done in the last few months, Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why there has been a decrease in violence in Iraq since the American surge, because we have tried to build up a parallel, a counterbalance to the Iraqi central government. That's the so-called the Awakening Sunni Councils. We have about 100,000 Sunnis now we arm and support and finance that is separate from the Iraqi government, because even American commanders have very little faith in the Iraqi central government. And this tells you again that despite all the investments in Iraq, despite all the sacrifice in Iraq, that the central government is not a unity government. It's a sectarian-led government controlled by two leading Shiite factions. And the fighting within the Shiite community is really a fight over the spoils of Iraq, over authority of Iraq, over who basically has the biggest say in the decision-making in Iraq itself.
Mm-hmm. What do those Sunni councils do with the money we give them?
Well, basically, we provide them with arms. We pay them about, we pay their members about $300 a month, and we tell them, listen, all we want from you is to basically police your neighborhoods, to basically go against Al-Qaeda, to prevent any militants from trying to exercise control in your neighborhoods. So basically, they're, you might say, multiple militias in various parts of Iraq, in Baghdad and other areas. Their sole purpose is to basically really buy them off, to bribe them, so that they don't really target either the American forces or the Iraqi security forces. And then, as you know, Kathleen, there is also a brewing crisis within the so-called awakening councils. They're extremely angry and dissatisfied because the Iraqi government has been unwilling to integrate them into the security apparatus. Mm. So I would not be surprised to basically in the next few weeks or a few months if we see some members of the so-called awakening councils, those elements who are supported and financed by the American government, taking arms not only against the centralized government in Baghdad, but also against the U.S. forces as well.
Hmm. So you think this is not a temporary upsurge in violence that the country is in for, and I guess we are as well, for a rocky road?
Well, Kathleen, the fact that we're not paying attention to Iraq, that does not mean that the situation in Iraq has basically become peaceful.
Right.
Violence has become a critical part of the Iraqi social fabric. We don't have to be experts on the military situation, Kathleen. When you're talking about 100 Iraqi killed on monthly basis, this is a large number. When you're talking about in the last 3 years, more than 1,000 suicide bombings have taken place in Iraq in the last 5 years. More than 1,000 suicide bombings. That is, Iraq, in fact, has set a world record, not in the rapid construction of democracy, but unfortunately in suicide bombings. And Iraqi communities, the Sunni Arabs, the Sunni Kurds, and the Shiite in Iraq, remain deeply divided over the future direction of Iraq, despite the tactical improvement in the security situation. So the political situation remains truly very grave. And even the Bush administration, even the president himself, acknowledges the major challenges facing the United States and Iraq. And this is why it seems to me that even though the surge has tactically improved the security situation, the political situation in Iraq remains very grave. And the recent fighting within the Shiite community is a clear indication of the multiple fault lines that are tearing the very social fabric of Iraq apart.
Mm-hmm. You know, the more we talk about this, and we've talked about it for years now, Fawaz, it seems in a way that the challenges that the U.S. faces, the challenges the Iraqis face, correct me if you got a different impression, do seem almost insurmountable.
Well, I believe that Iraqis will ultimately basically find a way out of their deadly embrace. I mean, Iraq, like other societies, is undergoing a major crisis, a major civil war, you might say. Mm-hmm. A civil war not only between the Sunni Arabs, who represent about 18% of the population, and the Shiites. But I think, let's remember, when you destroy the critical security apparatus, when civil society had not existed in Iraq, what you have now is that Iraqis are trying to find a way out. Iraqis are really fighting over the future of Iraq, over the question of authorities, over the distributions of power, over who has the most important say in the decision-making process. I think it's going to take many years, Kathleen. Mm. And like other societies, I would say that Iraq will likely take between 5 and 10 years to find a way out of this deadly embrace. Unfortunately, the American presence in Iraq has become part of the problem, not part of the solution. And in fact, the American military presence in Iraq is pouring fuel on a raging fire, far from really bringing about peace and stability in Iraq. I would argue that a gradual and orderly pulling out of American forces of Iraq will likely bring about a swifter resolution of the Iraqi crisis.
Fawaz Jurjis, our guest this hour, as we talk about the disturbing news from Iraq this week, the violence continuing, the civil war getting worse. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in the Milwaukee area. He is the Christian Johnson Chair in International Affairs and Middle Eastern Studies at Sarah Lawrence. He's also taught at Oxford, Harvard, and Columbia universities and was a research fellow at Princeton. He spent last year in the Middle East, and he has written, well, he was conducting field research on relations between the Islamist jihadists in West countries, particularly the U.S., in several Middle Eastern countries. He's the author of Journey of the Jihadist, Inside Muslim Militancy and the Far Enemy, Why Jihad Went Global. He also is the author of America and Political Islam, Clash of Interests or Clash of Cultures. To your phone calls, to your emails, 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee. The email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have one line open if you'd like to take it. It's yours, 800-486-8655. Fawaz Jurjis is our guest. Let's start with an email, which is a good one. Dave from Menominee, Michigan. Fawaz, was the ceasefire accomplished with our government paying al-Sadr not to attack? And does that mean our government would have control over how long the ceasefire would last or not last?
I don't think the United States has any major control over the Mahdi army. The army of Muqtada al-Sadr. I think his militia was deeply torn by various tensions and contradictions, and basically some factions basically did a great deal of harm to the Mahdi army. So Muqtada al-Sadr realized that basically he needed a break. But it seems to me that Muqtada al-Sadr has come to realize that the ceasefire has done a great deal of damage to the reputation of his army, because the Maliki government, the central government, has basically used the ceasefire to strengthen basically the position of his two major rivals, that is the Supreme Islamic Council and also the Fadila Party. Mm. And this is why really, at its very essence, the recent fightings in Iraq within the Shiite community is a fight over political authority, is a fight over the political spoils, is a fight over who should have a critical say in the decision-making process. And I don't think the Iraqi government can ignore Muqtada al-Sadr. Muqtada al-Sadr is one of the leading players within the Shiite community. This is a social movement, Kathleen. It's a movement that numbers in the millions. And surely, by taking on the Mahdi army, the militia of Muqtada al-Sadr, you're not really resolving the simmering political differences within the Shiite community itself.
We go to phone calls. Chet is our first caller. Hi, Chet.
Hi. Actually, good morning, and good morning to your guest here. And he has already answered a couple of my questions. I do want to express, as a citizen of the United States and just a human being, I want to express empathy for the loss of innocent civilian life in Iraq. I also want to ask the fundamental question, although I think it's in part been answered: should American forces leave, or coalition forces leave in entirety, and when? And then, again, I was somewhat confused about al-Sadr's decision to call a ceasefire. And besides what the guest said as the reason, is there any other reason why al-Sadr would have called for a ceasefire? And I'll take my comments off.
All right, thanks, Chet.
Thank you. You know, Kathleen, today President Bush, in an interview, he said that the recent fighting in Iraq is a positive sign, quote-unquote, is a positive sign, because the Iraqi central authorities have basically taken the fight to the Mahdi army. Mm-hmm. And this is yesterday, the Defense Department said that we're very pleased that the Iraqi government has decided to use force against criminal elements within the Mahdi army. And today, what we have witnessed as you said earlier, Kathleen, you read a transcript from NPR, is that tens of thousands of supporters of Muqtada Sadr basically protested this morning in Baghdad. Mm-hmm. And what this tells you is that, again, unfortunately, the dominant narrative within the Bush administration is that this is all about criminal gangs. This is all about the paramilitary organizations that basically challenging the legitimate authority in Iraq itself. Instead of seeing the fighting as basically indicating the existence of deep fault lines, not only in Iraq itself, but within the Shiite community. The administration does not seem to realize that the Maliki government, the central government, is not seen as a legitimate government by the Sunnis or even by Muqtada Sadr. Mm-hmm. In fact, as you know, some of the protesters called al-Maliki, the Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, an American stooge, and carried his coffin in Baghdad today. This is not a positive sign. This is not a good sign, because even if the Iraqi authorities, with the support of the British military forces in Basra and the American forces, were able to decimate the armed gangs and militias in Basra, the political situation will likely remain as grave as it is today. In fact, I would argue that the more killings that take place in Iraq, the more difficult for the political crisis to be resolved. Yes, the Iraqi forces have been able to kill about 200 militiamen in the last 1 week or so. The number of casualties are around 200, and the injured, of course, in the hundreds. But my fear is that if we keep looking at the situation in a narrow view, if we keep looking at the situation in terms of the bad guys and the good guys, we really don't understand what I call the simmering political crisis, the deep fault lines that are tearing the very social fabric of Iraq. There is no military solution to either Muqtada Sadr or the Sunni Arab communities. And in fact, the reason why Muqtada Sadr has basically declared a ceasefire a few months ago, he made it very clear. He wants to see whether the political process would bring about basically a resolution to the crisis. And of course, he was much weakened as a result of the confrontation with the American forces, with the British forces, and the Iraqi government. He was trying to play the political process. I fear we might be witnessing now a critical escalation, not only in the military situation, but also in the deepening, simmering political crisis in Iraq as well.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in this comment from a resident of Sadr City, quoted in the International Herald Tribune, who said, "We demand the downfall of the Maliki government. It does not represent the people. It represents Bush and Cheney." My question to you, Fawaz Jurjis, is how do you get a government that would represent the people, and what kind of government would that be?
Well, you know, Kathleen, the caller, just the previous caller, made the question. He said, should we stay or should we leave? I think your question, you put your finger on a very critical aspect of the complex situation in Iraq, that our very presence in Iraq is delegitimizing the Iraqi political ruling elite. And this is why not only the Sunni Arabs, who are basically have been leading the insurgency, do not really see the Maliki government, the central authority, as legitimate, but even now, the Shiite, a critical aspect of the Shiite community, basically views the Maliki government as basically an extension of the American military power in Iraq itself. And this element, the question is, how do you legitimize the Iraqi authorities? And this is why I would argue that despite everything that has been done in Iraq in the last few years, without investing the Iraqi government with political legitimacy, social legitimacy, and this is why I would argue that a gradual and orderly pulling out of American forces would go a long way to investing the emerging, the nascent Iraqi political scene with needed, much needed legitimacy, political legitimacy in the eyes not only of the Sunni Arab community, but also those radical Shiites who would like to see in Baghdad an authentic Iraqi government, not a government that's supported and shored up by foreign forces, including British and American forces.
We go to Habu from Madison. Hi, Habu.
Yes, good morning to both of you. And to Miss Kathleen, glad to hear you back on the radio and cackling away.
Thank you, Habu.
Just two quick points. One is for those people who were afraid that the oil law was going to tilt very much in favor of multinational corporations. I say save your powder, because we are seeing today what Iraqis can do at will if it is perceived that the oil has been given away by the Iraqi administration, who are really not representative of the people. And there is a big schism between the elected representatives and the administration pushing the American line. The second point is, I think Muqtada al-Sadr is a shrewd politician and cleric, I guess. He does not want to take on the brunt of the American forces for sake of seeing Fallujah all over again in Sadr City. So he's kind of pushing it, letting it sit, and then pushing it at certain points. And we have to remember that the Skiri Hakim is really one of the worst enforcers of the Iraqi government and the American direction, so to speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Habu.
Well, Kathleen, the caller has raised two really important points. The first point is that about the question of oil in Basra. Basra is a very pivotal city and port in terms of exporting the oil out of Iraq. And as I suggested earlier, the fight in Basra is also really a fight over the spoils, over who gets basically mm-hmm. a big share of the oil. And Muqtada al-Sadr has been saying for the last few months is that his rivals within the Shiite community, that is Abdul Aziz Hakim, as the caller mentioned, he is the leader of the Supreme Council, Supreme Islamic Council in Iraq, and the Fadila Party, which supports al-Maliki, basically have dominated both the financial and the political scene. And what we need to understand is that this is really about the fight who gets a bigger share of both the political and the financial rewards in Iraq. And this tells you about the fragmentation of political power in Iraq, and also the vested economic interest of the various factions in Iraq as well. And the second point, what we need to understand about, Muqtada al-Sadr, as you know, Kathleen, Muqtada al-Sadr is very much seen as a highly militant and radical leader in Iraq, and the Bush administration has done a great deal to discredit the man. The man is not, he's a very controversial and a very radical voice in Iraq. But surely his rival, Abdul Aziz Hakim, which really basically has a great say in the political decision-making in Iraq today, is one of the major allies of Iran inside Iraq itself. And this is the irony. The irony is we, the United States and the Iraqi government, go after Muqtada al-Sadr, whom we have portrayed as a militant radical leader who does not really believe in the American and the nascent order in Iraq. And yet we ally ourselves with Abdul Aziz Hakim, who is one of the leading allies of the ruling establishment in Iran itself. And this tells you about the ironies mm-hmm. and the complexities of the situation in Iraq, and also about the contradictions in American foreign policy itself. On the one hand, we say we are basically trying to limit the influence of Iran in the region itself. On the other hand, we ally ourselves mm-hmm. with one of its leading mm-hmm. allies in Iraq mm-hmm. as well.
Charles from La Crosse, hi.
Good morning. This goes right into what your guest was talking about. About 10 days ago, I caught a report on the BBC about the ongoing legislative election in Iran. And they framed it that the clerics may be losing seats and the military may be gaining seats in Iran. I'm asking your guest the status of that election and, of course, what impact, either covertly or overtly, Iran is going to have in Iraq. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
The elections in Iran basically institutionalized the dominance of the ultra-conservative and the mullah's forces in Iran. In fact, the irony, Kathleen, is that the mullah's regime, the conservative religious forces, basically used their confrontation with the United States to say to the Iranians, a vote for the conservative is a vote against American hegemony and dominance in the region. You must vote for us because we are standing up to American imperialism in Iraq and the region. You must vote for us because we are resisting American dominance in Iran and the region as well. I don't know whether the elections in Iran has had any influence on the Iraqi situation, but American officials in Iraq accuse militant and within the Mahdi army, within the army of Muqtada Sadr, who basically are taking orders from Iran in order to pour fuel on the raging fire in Iraq. So the United States is saying the recent fighting is basically the work of basically factions within the Mahdi army who are taking the orders from Iran, not from Muqtada Sadr. I would argue that all the indications, all indicators show that Muqtada Sadr is extremely angry over recent political developments in Iraq, over the arrest of some of his allies, and in fact, the fact that we have witnessed tens of thousands of protesters in Baghdad right. in the last few hours tells me that this is a greater political crisis than American and Iraqi officials would like us to believe.
Well, we won't be able to ignore it, right? Because we're going to see those images. We're going to see what's going on. George from Eau Claire. Hi, George. George, hello. George, we'll have you turn down that radio and get back to us, please. Let's go next to we have all these Georges today. George from Brooklyn. Hi, George.
Good morning.
Hi.
Everyone is talking about the two extremes, either victory or withdrawal. And nobody's talking about, you know, helping them solve their problem. And I'd just like to throw out on the table for your guest the thought that is it too late to subdivide Iraq into three regional areas, religiously or tribally, into a federation so that maybe they can find peace?
May I?
Yes, go right ahead, sir.
I would argue partitioning Iraq into three separate entities or states, a Sunni Arab in Baghdad and central Iraq, a Kurdish state in the north, and a Shia state in the south, is basically a recipe for multiple wars. You have now a major fight, confrontation taking place in Iraq. If you partition Iraq into three entities, you're going to have multiple and more wars in Iraq, not to mention the intervention of regional states, particularly Iran in the south and Turkey against the Kurds, and of course Saudi Arabia will come to help the Sunni Arabs. This is not really a way out of the deadly embrace. In fact, regardless of how difficult the situation is, I would argue in the next 5 or 10 years, Iraqis will likely realize that the only way to proceed, the only way out of this particular deadly and lethal fight is a social contract, an inclusive contract, a unity government that takes into account the interests of the three communities. And to go back to his question about whether we are talking about stay on leave, in fact, I would argue that when I say a gradual and orderly pulling out of American forces, really, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about trying to exit Iraq while trying to fill the security vacuum created by the exit of American forces. And if you look carefully at the plan of Senator Barack Obama, that's exactly what he is talking about. He's talking about taking out one or two brigades a month while trying to engage the international community and trying to convince neutral Muslim states by trying to fill the vacuum created by the American exit from Iraq. So, no, I don't think it's about really pulling out American forces and basically forgetting about Iraq. My hope is that whoever is elected president in 2008 will basically focus on trying, while disengaging militarily from Iraq, deepening our political and social involvement, trying to really help the Iraqis put their countries together and trying to bring the international community into Iraq, trying to invest, as I suggested earlier, Kathleen, invest the central Iraqi government with much-needed political legitimacy in order to convince the Iraqis this is their government, this is their country, this is their future.
We have another email, speaking of elections and policy changes. This idea, the email goes, can't happen with the current administration. The email person says they're obstinate. Perhaps the next president could do this. Ask the Iraqi government to hold one more election of the type that they did before, with just one referendum on the ballot that basically says, should the U.S. forces remain here for another year to provide security, or should they pull out within 3 months? On the promise of asking this again in another year. My guess is they'd say go, and then we could go with their permission and let the Iraqis deal with the situation themselves with no further interference from us. Steve in River Falls, what do you think?
Well, Kathleen, the difficulty with this particular initiative is that as long as we stay in Iraq, our very presence is seen as basically illegitimate, and our very presence is seen as to tilt the balance of power in favor of the pro-American allies in Iraq itself. And this is why I think a much more creative scenario is to basically make it very clear to the Iraqis that we would like to leave in Iraq in about 12 or 15 months, and we're going to do it in an orderly and gradual fashion, some of the plans, Senator Barack Obama is saying, one or two brigades a month, and also try to bring the United Nations and the international community. I don't know whether it can be done, Kathleen. This is a very difficult situation. And try to fill the, and then have elections. And this is why I think the question of elections is really, really crucial, Kathleen, because Iraqis believe the various previous elections were not fair, were not legitimate, and this is why you need an election monitored by the international community and is not basically, does not take place while the United States has a major military force in the country. So elections are crucial, but elections must take place under the auspices of an international community, particularly the United Nations and other powers as well.
Fawaz Jurjis, our guest this hour, and he is Christian Johnson Chair in International Affairs and Middle Eastern Studies at Sarah Lawrence College, has spent a great deal of time in the Middle East last year, not just last year, previous occasions as well, but he spent all of last year doing extensive interviews on relations between the Islamist jihadists and West countries. He is with us from time to time, and we're welcoming phone calls for him. The number is, George, thanks for your call, 800-486-8655, 227-2050, if you happen to be joining us in Milwaukee. Or you could send an email if you'd like, and that address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we'll be talking about the Colorado River, and we'll look at water management, climate change in the American West, and ask the question, why are so many people still moving there when there isn't very much water? That's coming up following the news from National Public Radio at 10 o'clock. Fawaz Jurjis is with us now. We're talking about the increased violence in Iraq this week and welcoming your phone calls. Anne from Madison, hello.
Yes, thank you. Several times you've mentioned the deep divisions among the various factions of the Shiite parties, and I wonder if you could be a little bit more specific about what those are.
Well, I think I mentioned two major, points. The first point is that it's a fight, it's a struggle over the future of Iraq itself. While Abdulaziz Hakim and his Supreme Council and the Fadila Party and al-Maliki believe that the presence of American troops is critical to stability and peace in Iraq, Muqtada Sadr believes that the United States, the American forces, must leave Iraq as soon as possible so that Iraqis would have self-determination. Point one. Point two, also, I think the divisions have to do with differences over the distribution of political power of authority as well. basically they are fighting over who should basically have the final say in the decision-making process itself. Muqtada Sadr, the radical nationalist and Sunni Shiite leader, resents the dominance of his two rivals, the Fadila Party and the Supreme Council in Iraq, and believes that you should have a greater say in the government itself. And thirdly, also let's remember, it's a fight over economic and financial spoils. I mean, both Muqtada Sadr and the Mehdi army, on the one hand, and the two leading Shiite parties in Basra, the Supreme Council and the Fadila, are fighting over who should have a bigger slice of the oil situation in Basra itself. So I would say political, over the political future of Iraq, whether Iraq should have self-determination, whether American forces should remain in Iraq. Secondly, over a political authority, and also over huge, big, vested financial interest. We're talking about billions of dollars involved in Basra.
Hmm. Does that explain, Ann? Ann's gone. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go next to Paul from Slinger. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Two questions. First one is, when England created this artificial construct in the early 20th century, they did it primarily to have a guaranteed source of oil because they changed their global naval fleet from coal to oil. And they intentionally created a boundaries of conflicting ethnic and religious groups so that they keep them fragmented so that they could control it with a viceroy and with the nominal English troops there. So the question is, Gertrude Bell wrote a book that said that, who was the English viceroy, I believe, there, said that the Shiites could never rule there because they just don't have the mentality to do this, and the Sunnis are there, which are only 18%, as you said. And, of course, England supported the Sunnis. The first question is, why should we reconfigure that area and create three sovereign entities? And my second question is, explain to me the oil that is sold. This is the money's in U.S. currency flows into what, a federal Iraqi bank? And then who actually controls that money? Is it dispensed equally, or what's the formula for dispensing that money between the provinces of Iraq? And how do you control when this money is dispersed that it's not being moved into Switzerland through these different power groups?
Right.
Not doing work for the common citizens of that country.
Well, that's a good question.
Well, Kathleen, the caller has raised a very important question about the modern history of Iraq. He was referring to British colonialism. As you know, it was Britain that constructed modern Iraq. Basically, it brought, as you know, the entire region, the entire Middle East, modern Middle East, after the collapse of the Ottoman Empire in World War I in 1918, basically was invented by Britain and France. The various boundaries, the various frontiers are extremely artificial and superficial. That's how at least the borders and the frontiers are seen by people who live in that part of the world. The problem with the fact is that the boundaries are there now. And once you dispense with any particular national frontier, you are opening the gates of hell. What do you do? Once you say that you want to basically construct a different social and political entity in Iraq, you want to split Iraq, partition Iraq into three ethnic and political entities. What I think the caller is really, the question that the caller is raising, how difficult and how fragile are political identities in Iraq, and in fact the destruction of the Iraqi state, the destruction of the central state has really revealed and exposed the fault lines, not only amongst the three communities, but also within the community, within the various communities themselves. The Shiites are divided, the Sunni Arabs are divided, and also the Kurds are divided. And I think the question of oil, the question of economic resources, lies at the heart of the struggle that's taking place in Iraq. You're not just talking about And this is why I think the Bush administration is correct on this particular point. The Bush administration has been trying to pressure the sectarian-based central government to pass a legislation whereby the oil resources, the money goes to the various communities. Because, as you know, Kathleen, oil basically is located in southern Iraq and northern Iraq. That is where the Shiite communities live and the Kurdish communities live. There are no major oil wells where the Sunni Arab communities. And in many ways, the fight, the struggle in Iraq is not only about the political future of Iraq, it's about the fight over economic resources. Who controls the economic resources in Iraq? How economic resources are divided and split? And really, in many ways, again, as I suggested earlier, the fight in Basra, and this is we have not seen a great deal of analysis, is a fight about the economic spoils, the financial spoils, because the various Shiite factions in Basra are benefiting a great deal, not only from, the money that comes from oil, but also you're talking about factions that are taking some of the oil resources outside of the central government, that you have a large element of the oil resources are going to the various militias, and the fight itself is in Basra is partially related to the financial and oil benefits that exist in Basra.
We haven't talked about this yet. What are the economic ramifications, Fawaz, of the blowing up of one of Iraq's two main oil export pipelines, which happened today, I believe?
Well, Iraqi officials say that the blowing up one of the pipes does not affect the export and transportation of oil from Basra. This is the official narrative. We have to wait and see how serious was the attack on one of the two leading oil pipelines. My take on it is that if the confrontation escalates, if the Iraqi government goes to the end, as the prime minister just said, that his fight against the Mahdi army is a fight to the end. If the Mahdi army, the army of Muqtada al-Sadr, basically realizes that its very future at stake, I would argue that Muqtada al-Sadr would go also to the end by trying to damage the two oil pipelines, and this is really would basically have what I call an existential effect on the economic well-being of Iraq. We have to wait and see. And this is why I do hope, and again, Kathleen, we know that the Iraqi government and representatives of Muqtada al-Sadr have been talking on the telephone. I would argue that after today, after the protests of tens of thousands of Iraqis of pro-Muqtada al-Sadr in Baghdad, I would argue that the Iraqi government will realize that a political settlement, a settlement whereby peace and order are brought into Basra and taking the interests, the legitimate interest of Muqtada al-Sadr is really the way out instead of a war to the end, as the Prime Minister had just made it very clear.
Paul, thanks for your call. Ed from Wausau, hi.
Hi. I had heard that elections were going to be scheduled in Iraq, I think, for August.
The fall. In the fall.
Oh, in the fall.
Yes.
But al-Maliki wouldn't even be there if it wasn't for al-Sadr.
Yes.
I guess.
Yes.
And I just don't understand why, the whole thing in Basra is taking place if the elections are going to be, if he's going to be alienating half of the population.
It's a very question, and this is really, I think your question really contextualized the discussion. This is not just a fight between the good guys and the bad guys. Surely the militias have done a great deal of harm in Basra, and surely the criminals must be confronted. That's not the question. But also there is a greater political question on the table. Muqtada al-Sadr, who basically played a key role in basically bringing about Maliki into the government, because Maliki was, faced a stiff opposition by some Shiite and Sunni politicians. What Muqtada al-Sadr is saying that al-Maliki government has fallen under the dominance of his two rivals, that is Abdulaziz Hakim, the leader of the Supreme Council and also the Fadila Party. And what Muqtada al-Sadr is saying, you must take my interest into account. And what Muqtada Sadr is saying, Muqtada Sadr has been calling for elections, and the elections are basically scheduled for the fall. But in the last few weeks, Muqtada Sadr has accused the Iraqi government of arresting scores of his supporters, and he argues, he claims, that the arrest of his key supporters will not enable Muqtada Sadr to basically wage a very effective campaign in the fall, because he claims that Abdulaziz Hakim and the Fadila party are trying to weaken his coalition and preventing Muqtada Sadr from achieving a political victory in the fall.
Fawaz, thank you so much. A great pleasure to speak with you again. Thanks.
Thank you.
Fawaz Jurjis, our guest. He is a scholar of the Middle East. He is a professor, Christian Johnson Chair in International Affairs and Middle Eastern Studies at Sarah Lawrence. He's also taught at a number of other places, including Oxford and at Princeton and Harvard and Columbia, and has written extensively, including Journey of the Jihadist Inside Muslim Militancy. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks to John Treader for on-air production, and thanks for all of your calls and emails. News ahead, and we'll return here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.